You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. For the last 2 weeks, we have been running an interview about Neil Armstrong with his biographer, which is James Hansen. And we're going to have the third and final part of that this evening. But first, let's hear a song, Tranquility Base, by Eric Brace. And it's about Neil Armstrong. And it was first performed in 2009 to mark the 40th anniversary of Apollo 11.
With all of us watching you on the TV, taking small steps and giant leaps, planting the flag in a place no one had been. 238,000 and more miles away through the infinite night. The landing was tough, but you brought her down. So tell me, what did you see? Was it glorious, beautiful, frightening, or sad? You had the view no one else had. Did you turn away from the place you call home and stare at the stars? When you stepped off the ladder, did you think of Ohio? Your children, your parents, your wife. Your Panther jet brought down in Korea. Did you ask, who am I to live such a life? One so glorious, beautiful, frightening and blue. No one but you ever had such a view. Did you call it Tranquility Base? Did everything fall into place? Say to Michael and Buzz, there beside you. They'd done their jobs, you had done yours. You were never much for small talk. And when you hit the atmosphere, flames, they were everywhere. Did you wonder if you'd make it through? Pacific, you were just a speck in the blue. But still glorious, beautiful, silent and sad. You had the view no one else had. When you headed back to the place you call home, did everything look out of place? Do you miss Tranquility Base? Something up there, do you want to go back? You miss Tranquility Base. You miss Tranquility Base. Oh, 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 oh,
Eric Brace with his song, Tranquility Base. Now, James Hansen is a professor of history at Auburn University, which, surprise, surprise, is in Auburn, Alabama. And he is the author of the book First Man, which is a biography of Neil Armstrong. This is the official Neil Armstrong biography. Peter Iwood caught up with James and had a conversation with him. We've played two parts on the past 2 weeks. Those parts are now available for download on our Solon FM Space Show website. And here is part three of this conversation between Peter and James.
And we're back with Dr. James Hansen, Jim Hansen, the author of the biography of Neil Armstrong, First Man, and a number of other books. We're getting running out of time once again. Just, did you get a sense that Neil would have liked to have got another flight? Once he was assigned to that first attempt and it actually took place, was he kind of resigned to, well, that's the end of my space flight?
Yeah, I think he's pretty much resigned to it, although he said he wasn't absolutely sure that he wouldn't get to go again, until some months after he was back. He did have the example of John Glenn before him. After Glenn made his flight at the first American orbital flight, Glenn was not going to be allowed to fly again either. He was just too much, too much of a hero. They didn't want to risk him. So I think Neil was resigned to not. He would have gone again for sure. I think sure. He would have stayed active in the astronaut program if they had wanted him to. I think even sadder was, he accepted a position within NASA where he was the associate administrator for aeronautical research. And there was a lot of interesting things going on. They were, the transfer of digital fly-by-wire technology that really had been used in the Apollo spacecraft was being, Neil thought very much that it could be applied to aircraft. And he was always an airplane guy. So he would have been very happy, staying and on top of the NASA aeronautical research programs. But the problem was they wouldn't let him do his job. Right. It was a Washington D.C. job, and he was constantly being called over by this senator or congressman or ambassador
for the federal
shake hands, and he just got tired of that. Not letting him do his job, and he said, "I got to just get out of here." And of all things, he decided to go, teach college. Was a pretty surprising, he wasn't totally left alone there either. I mean, when the word got out that he was teaching a class at the University of Cincinnati, the first day of class, all kinds of, reporters show up, and that infuriates Neil. But eventually, that settled down, and he got to lead something close to a normal academic life.
Was certainly a sense I had of him, and I had only had like 45 minutes with him when I met him in Australia, but he certainly seemed to be a very, very happy and contented and comfortable in his skin at that time. And, I had my perceptions about him, shy, aloof, distance, but didn't come to me that way at all, and I guess you'd have much better insight on that.
Well, I think at an earlier time in his life he would have had a different impression, Peter. He would have been more like that. I think Neil, in the last years of his life, and especially in his marriage with Carol, was really enjoying himself like he never had done before. I mean, he wasn't flying anymore, except for from inside a 737 or something, but he was, his health, it sounded, this sounds might silly to say since he died of heart problems, but his health was relatively good, and he was enjoying, traveling around. I'm sure he just loved the time he spent in Australia, and, if that heart bypass, if everything had worked out, he would have had, I think many more good years of really enjoying his life. So, I think what the person that we were talking to, was not the Neil Armstrong of 1970 or even 1980.
Sure.
Or not 1990. I think he, over the years, had mellowed, had gotten perspective, but he never really changed. I mean, that's one thing I was confident about. I mean, Neil always was Neil, and I thought when the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 flight came up and there was a big event at the National Air and Space Museum, and all of the Apollo 11 crew was there along with a number of the other astronauts, and all three of the crew members got a chance to talk. And what was so interesting was, it's so illuminating that Mike spoke first, and he was very brief, and he was very funny, and he was very charming, and he was very warm in his comments, just typical Mike. And then Buzz came up, and it was like a presidential address. He had teleprompters, he had, very complicated view graphs, or not PowerPoint presentations. It was a presidential address. He was telling the nation what we needed to do in space. And then Neil came up last, and Neil started by saying, and I wish I could remember his exact words, but he said, the title of my lecture tonight is, government
government and
something, just this real, real dry academic title. And in fact, when he said it, there was some laughter, in the audience, because they were thinking, he must be joking. He's not really going to give us an academic lecture, is he? And I looked at him, I knew him well enough by that point, and I could see that he kind of flushed a little bit when he heard the laughter. Because by golly, that's exactly what he was planning on doing. And he did. He gave a 20-minute lecture, which would have been, a good lecture at any, history conference or technical conference in the country. But, people didn't want – what he didn't realize, but God bless him anyway, is that's not what people wanted from him. They wanted him to loosen up, tell him some stories that he'd not told him before, here was an opportunity to really get to know Neil better, and here he is giving a lecture that I could have given, So it was just – but it was just so telling. The three of them was and it showed Collins called the three of them amiable strangers.
Sure.
And they were strangers, right up to the very end, Even that night, the three of them were – you could tell they just weren't – they were there, and they were all doing what they needed to do to make that event successful, just like they had to make Apollo 11 successful. But they were three different, very different people.
Did you get the sense of the, sort of maybe dreaded or wasn't looking forward to like the 5-year and 10-year anniversaries, which they'd have to go through on a obviously immediate basis?
He didn't attend all of them.
No.
He was much more regular in attending reunions of his Navy fighter squadron. He loved those guys. He was the youngest one. He was 20 years old when he was flying in Korea, and some of those guys had flown combat in World War II, and he loved those guys. He hardly ever missed one of their reunions. But when it came to the astronaut reunions, well, one thing he said about it, and I don't think he was, this wasn't immodest of him. He said that if he goes, then, it takes a lot of attention off the other guys, from a media point of view and from a public audience point of view, it becomes too much about Neil. And Neil didn't want that kind of a spotlight. So he chose the real curious thing I have to tell you, which shows you something about his relationship with Buzz. When I was doing the book, I got a phone call in my cell one day, and it was Buzz Aldrin, and Buzz wanted me to talk to Neil to convince him he needed to go to one of these reunions. Apparently, Buzz had been, Buzz was going to go, and he wanted Neil to go, and he was calling me to try to get me to persuade Neil. And I said to Buzz, Buzz, you were so close to him, you were in the lunar module with him, why are you calling me to convince your crewmate that he needs to come to a reunion? But I think that it tells you a lot. It tells you Buzz really wasn't that close to Neil. That Buzz, I don't think Buzz, even today, really understands Neil, who Neil was that well. Because Neil never showed it to him, and they never really clicked as friends. They just clicked as people who had to do a mission together.
Yeah, for sure.
Our guest on the space show this evening is James Hansen, Professor of History at Auburn University, Auburn, Alabama. He is the author of the book First Man, which is a biography of Neil Armstrong, which, of course, is the subject of our discussion. Our interviewer here on Southern FM is Peter Aylward.
And we're back with Dr. James Hansen, Jim Hansen, the author of the biography of Neil Armstrong, First Man, and a number of other books. Jim, I just saw a notification. You're doing an event in November. An Apollo 14 event. Well, tell me about that. It looks quite it's a opera.
Very unique one. Yeah, there's been an opera written about Apollo 14. Which, of course, is the Al Shepard, flight, most famous maybe for, Al hitting a couple golf balls on the lunar surface. There's an opera that's been written. It's been performed just a couple of times, and it's going to be performed out in Palm Springs, California. And Ed Mitchell, who was part of the Apollo 14 crew, is going to come. There's a role for a narrator in this opera, and Mitchell's going to do that. And I've been asked to come and, give some talks and sign some books. I'm actually a friend of the woman who's in charge of the Opera Institute out in Palm Springs. So I've been kind of involved in the planning of this to some extent. A space opera. I haven't actually heard the music, so I can't really evaluate, the caliber. I'm hoping it's really, really good, but it should be Rick Armstrong, Neil's oldest son, supposedly going to come to the opera, and so it should be quite a night.
Because he's a musician himself, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that should be fascinating.
He's very into music. He's one of my Facebook friends, and most all of his posts have to do with and the groups that he follows are – I'm not sure I can remember their names, but they're kind of alternative rock kind of music from groups that were very, very, that maybe made their music mostly in the 90s or 80s and are still around. And Rick follows them very, very closely. And he plays the electric guitar.
Okay. So when is Neil Armstrong the opera coming out, Jim?
Well, I'm more interested in Neil Armstrong the movie or the Neil Armstrong the miniseries. I can tell you, nothing's definite, and I've been on a roller coaster in terms of trying to get this into some kind of a cinematic form. But currently, there's interest. The writing team that made Band of Brothers, HBO. Which I thought was a very, very excellent show, and they won a number of Emmys for their writing. They are interested in the potential of making First Man into a long format TV programming, meaning a 6, 8, 10 parts, series. Yeah. And so I really think that would be the way to go. When I've seen the scripts. Two scripts for movies that have been based on my book, and in a 2-hour movie you can't do much besides Apollo 11. Again, Neil's story is so much richer than that that it really, I think the idea of a mini series, especially if it's done with the kind of quality that Band of Brothers was done, then we might have something special. So we'll see.
Well, I hope that comes to pass. To finish off, Jim, you've obviously done other things, and I think the more recently you worked with John Young on his autobiography. Could you tell us about that? It's called the
It was a very different experience, going from a biography to an autobiography. In an autobiography, it's really – it's John. Everything had to stay in John's voice. John, he's kind of the astronaut's astronaut for me. I assume your audience would be familiar with who he was, but he flew Gemini, he flew 2 Apollo flights, he was commander of Apollo 16, he was the first commander of the space shuttle, he was chief of the astronaut corps in Houston for a number of years. Quite a character. But he wanted to write his own book. He didn't want any historians associated with it. But that situation changed after he finished it, and people started to look at it, and they thought, and they decided, the family decided it needed some assistance. So I came in at that point and sort of did a review of the manuscript, and I told the family what I thought needed to be done, and once I told them, they said, well, since you know what needs to be done, would you please consider doing it?
Okay.
And so that's how I got involved in the project. And it's very different, of course, because with an autobiography, it's someone's own personal first-person story. And, I have to – whatever writing I do, I have to stay out of the way of the author's voice. I have to promote the author's voice. I mean, if I add material, and I added quite a bit of material, then, I have to write it as John Young.
Sure.
And of course, whenever I did that, I would send it, everything got sent back to the Youngs, and Susie, his wife, and John would review, the changes or the additions, and they could, accept it or reject it or change it or whatever. And the problem with, I guess it was a problem. It was just too bad that John's health kind of took a turn for the worse right in the middle of all that.
Oh, I see.
So when I needed him to be responding to my comments, he really wasn't in any position to do it. So it really put more of a burden on me just to continue to, to write. There were things, that I knew needed to be in there that John didn't put there for one reason or another.
Mm.
So I fleshed out the book quite a bit. But again, wanting to keep it, keep it real, keep it in John, keep it, when I didn't want a reader to say, okay, well, I can hear John here, but on this next page, I don't hear John. He sounds, right. Sounds like a different person. And in fact, the reviews I've read are quite nice about that. They feel like they can hear John all the way through it. Hmm. And that's all the appreciation I need, because I know I wrote a lot of it that was in his voice.
Sure.
But it's an incredible story. I mean, in terms of the life of an astronaut, I mean, John, he had a 40-year career with NASA.
Hmm.
Compared to Neil's, one Gemini flight and one Apollo flight, John, did so much more relative to the American space program. So in that sense, he's a lot more significant but he's obviously not the icon. Yes. He's an icon of sorts, but he's not the global icon. I mean, you could ask somebody in India or Australia who John Young is, and, they probably won't know.
Mm.
And then same in the U.S. I mean, it's not an astronaut name that, that is instantly recognizable, certainly not like Armstrong. But
sure.
I'm glad I did it. I've kind of made a little – it's not the first time I've done this. I've now done 3 books where I've actually helped someone write their own life story. One of them was a book called Truth, Lies, and O-Rings, which was the story of Alan MacDonald, who is the head of the solid rocket booster program for Morton Thiokol that made the SRBs, for the shuttle.
Oh, okay.
And it's his story of the shuttle and especially of the Challenger accident.
Oh.
And so he wanted to tell a story, but he needed assistance from a historian and a writer. So I did that with him, and that worked out extremely well too. So I don't know. I'll probably do a few more of those. I get real interested in the life story of someone, but instead of a biography, it just seems better for them to tell their own
sure.
story. So I step in and try to help with that.
Of course, looping back from the O-ring, of course, Neil was on the investigation board on the Challenger disaster.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was vice chair. In fact, he didn't. I don't think he even historically has gotten the credit that he deserved for. He was kind of Mr. Inside when it came to running the Rogers investigation, and William Rogers, who chaired it, who was a former Secretary of State, he was Mr. Outside. He handled all of the bigger, the political aspects of it and dealing with the White House and all that, but Neil, took charge of the engineering analysis and so forth. So Neil was really important to the Challenger investigation.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, unfortunately, time's gotten away from us, so we're going to have to wrap it up now. I could keep talking all day, but
getting back
to you, and I've got to get to other things.
Well, maybe when I come to Australia, one of my I would say one of my top two or three things that I want to do in the rest of my life, somewhere in the top two or three is go to Australia. And so I would love to come, and I don't want to spend just, a couple weeks. I want to stay for a while.
Okay.
So if I ever do that, you'll be one of the first to know.
Brilliant. We look forward to that. Do let us know.
All right.
Well, thank you, Jim. Look forward to the new books and all of the things that you're doing, and hopefully we'll catch up with you when you're in Australia. Thanks for joining us on the Space Show.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was Peter Iwood chatting with James Hansen, the official biographer of Neil Armstrong. And James is a professor of history at Auburn University in Auburn, Alabama. Coming up soon, we're going to be looking at Skylab and how it was saved.
For local news and views and the greatest variety of music, this is Southern FM 88.3.